We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
At a time when things are most uncertain, we turn to the most certain thing there is. Science. Science can overcome diseases, create cures, and yes, beat pandemics. It has before. It will again. Because when it's faced with a new opponent, it doesn't back down. It revs up, asking questions till it finds what it's looking for. That's the power of science. So we're taking our science and unleashing it. Our research, experts, and resources. All in an effort to advance potential therapies and vaccines. Other companies and academic institutions are doing the same. The entire global scientific community is working together to beat this thing. And we're using science to help make it happen. Because when science wins, we all win.
That's a commercial for the pharmaceutical giant Pfizer titled Science Will Win. Makes science sound almost, omnipotent? Certainly infallible. Is science really this constant victory over problems? Or is it a little bit more of a crooked road for science? We would all be worse off without scientists and their disciplines, but are we ascribing too much to science by essentially putting our faith in science and science alone at a time like this? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, May the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the idolatry of science with Dr. Jesse Yao, author of the book Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age. A little bit later, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller joins us as we continue our series introducing the books of the Bible. We'll be introducing Philemon, and then it's listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the idolatry of science, Dr. Jesse Yao. He recently retired as departmental head from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, where he worked in applied science and led programs in energy and environment. Dr. Yao previously served on the Commission on Theology and Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's author of the book Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age. Dr. Yao, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd. It's a pleasure to be invited into the conversation.
A recent Pfizer ad ran. It was titled, Science Will Win. It said at the beginning of the ad, science is, quote, the most certain thing there is. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's a problematic statement. It's a very bold statement, and I think it's meant to be reassuring. But it doesn't capture all of the reality of what's certain or what there is. As a Christian, I look at that and I say, you know, God's word is a lot more certain than science. And there's a story behind the certainty of science that I'll come to in just a second. God's word is more certain than science, as far as I can tell as a Christian, and I think that's revealed by God. Even if I step back from the proposition that God's word is certain, let's say I'm not a Christian, I don't accept God's word, I still have to say, okay, I look at science. It consists of investigations. It consists of a body of knowledge. It consists of a way we look at things. But it doesn't include things like love or things like beauty. There are parts of life, parts of the reality around us that science can't really come to grips with. Those are, I would argue, that things like beauty and love are just as certain as anything science can measure. There's another aspect of this that's worth thinking about, and that is science is a very dynamic process, if I can describe it as a process. It's a discovery process. It's a curiosity-driven process. Sometimes it's a profit-driven process. And from that point of view, science is continually in a state of upheaval, uncertainty, especially during the current coronavirus epidemic. People are fond of saying, we need to make decisions based on sound science, to which I want to say, well, which science do you want to use? Science keeps changing as we discover new things, as we find that we didn't quite understand previous things. Science is a very dynamic thing. So which science do you want to use? Science is a wonderful thing, but certainty, to use the word certain, implies something that we can really rely on, and it almost suggests that it doesn't change. And in some cases, those things just aren't true.
Is it accurate, as many do today, to speak of science, and as the ad does as well, as kind of an entity itself?
Well, again, I think it's that idea is good as far as it goes, but it's really not complete. If we look at science as a process, okay, that might be a fair assessment, and that would be an entity, but it's not the only entity there is. If you think of science as involving creativity and inspiration, well, it's also true that writers, poets, musicians, composers, they all practice creativity and inspiration, and that's not science, at least not science per se. So science might be an entity, but it's certainly not the only game in town. It's not all there is to life.
Is this view of science that we often hear, I trust science, something like that, is it politically and morally neutral?
Actually, because science is practiced, and I'm describing it as a process there, because science is not practiced in a vacuum, it's practiced in a context, I don't see how it can be politically or morally neutral. From the point of view of an exploration process, a discovery process, a learning process, that by itself might be neutral, a body of facts might be neutral, but inevitably those investigations happen in a context. The science is applied in one way or another. The science has scientific discoveries have their own implications. And so right away, what started out maybe as something that we could look at in an abstract way or as a neutral way, it takes on political overtones, it takes on moral overtones, and it gets back to the question of, well, okay, which science do you use? And how is that science changing since it's never static?
Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, as late as February 29th, was asked by the Today Show the following. People are walking up right now with real concerns about this. They want to go to malls and movies, maybe the gym as well. Should we be changing our habits, and if so, how? Fauci replied, no. Right now, at this moment, there's no need to change anything that you're doing on a day-to-day basis. Right now, the risk is still low, but this could change. Well, then on February 17th, Dr. Fauci told CNN, the only people who need masks are those who are already infected to keep from exposing others. Dr. Fauci now recommends masks to everyone, as we know, and I certainly do not blame him for getting these things wrong initially, but how do you explain the fact that the science is the most important thing out there crowd is willing to forgive and forget his mistakes, but offers virtually no forgiveness to the non-scientific community, in particular to religious believers?
Unfortunately, I think this reflects human nature. Dr. Fauci changing his story, I don't blame him in the least. He, like the rest of us, is learning new things as this goes along. There's still a lot of questions about the coronavirus, and we're going to continue to learn new things, and the situation is going to continue to change. And I'm going to come back to that point in just a second. But as far as the forgiveness, the acceptance of the fact that science changes, but offering no forgiveness to the non-scientific community, I think that reflects an unfortunate limitation in worldview. I guess I could take that on a couple of different levels. It could be just reflecting a certain amount of ignorance about religious believers and spiritual matters that, frankly, we're not immune from mistakes, especially mistakes in communication. So from that point of view, maybe we need to be forgiven from time to time. But on a deeper level and a more fundamental level, it reflects a lack of recognition that religious believers are founding their life on something that, by the grace of God, is very solid, it's very real. It's a lot more real than science because it's based on God's Word. And there's a lack of recognition of that. If I pretend that doesn't exist, or if my worldview is based on an assumption that the spiritual dimension of life is not real, then yeah, I'm going to have a hard time dealing with that. And to practice forgiveness or provide any kind of latitude for religious believers, that demands that I recognize that there's more to the world than just the science that I'm staking my life on. And so it's a challenging, potentially a fearsome kind of a thing. And whenever I see this going on, I often see people acting in a defensive way, which tells me that at some basic level, they realize that there is a contest between worldviews here, and they don't want to really come to grips with it.
We're talking with Dr. Jesse Yao, recently retired as department head of Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, where he worked in applied science and led programs in energy and environment, about the idolatry of science. When we come back, we tend to revere them, even turn them into celebrities and experts on everything. Why? Are you still grieving, even months after the passing of someone in your life? The effects of grief, loss, and mourning are long-lived, even if it seems the rest of the world has moved on. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is Living with Grief, Bound by Sorrow, Wrapped in Comfort. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or look for Living with Grief at issuesetc.org. When you purchase Living with Grief, be sure to request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the idolatry of science with Dr. Jesse Yao, author of the book Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age. Dr. Yao, why do we tend to revere scientists almost to the... We certainly make them celebrities, but we revere them almost to the point of infallibility, or perhaps even ascribing to them expertise way outside their disciplines.
I've noticed this, and it's hard to avoid. I think it's partly based on the idea that we're looking at people that have often more education than we do, although that's a double-edged sword. I'm not a musician, and I'm in awe of musicians. But I don't ascribe them infallibility. People who are not scientists look at science and they think, oh my, these people have mastered calculus. I don't even know what calculus is. These people have mastered organic chemistry. Oh my, I don't know anybody that's learned organic chemistry well enough to make a career out of it. And it goes on from there. And so the admiration, I think it starts from the point of view of, here are some people that are very smart, very accomplished. They've mastered some subjects that maybe I haven't ever mastered. In fact, I didn't even consider them. And then I sort of go on from there, perhaps, and say, wow, if they can do that, what else can they do? And so we sort of go beyond any kind of common sense approach to, you know what, we all put on our pants one leg at a time. We're all members of the human race. And so we do tend to ascribe expertise to them that maybe they would not claim. Sometimes they might. But, you know, we see the same thing happening with political celebrities and even more so with actors and actresses. How many different actors and actresses are being asked about their views on the coronavirus, their views on climate change, their views on all kinds of scientific or technical topics for which they have no training. They might have taken a class in science in high school, or perhaps a class in college, maybe. But we as a society tend to look very highly at their views, and it's a little bit misplaced. Well, actually, I'll say it's a lot misplaced.
What happens to science if there isn't an objective moral component?
I think if the moral component or the moral context of science is ignored, it really runs the risk of ending badly, of running off the rails and going in directions that are really corrosive for society, corrosive eventually for the scientist as an individual. I mentioned earlier that science, in my view, is in a very healthy way based on curiosity. It includes creativity and inspiration. These are God-given gifts. This is part of the pleasure of being in God's creation, is discovering parts of his creation, which scientific investigations, one way or another, they're teaching us things about God's creation. But remember, that creation comes from God. Well, so do moral expectations. And I think back to some of the atrocities that happened in medical investigations done in concentration camps in World War II. You know, that was science run off the rails. And there are other examples that we've seen over history. Without the moral component, there's a real problem of science going in a direction that's very corrosive for society. It's also a problem in that it's corrosive for the scientist himself or herself. Losing that moral anchor, we wind up in some very bad places.
In your lengthy career as a scientist, did you ever think that your Christian faith held you back from being a better scientist?
No, actually, I think it was a help. You know, frankly speaking, from a career point of view, the only thing that held me back was, in my experience, was decisions I made, value decisions. I had, at different points of time, had to make a conscious decision. Was I going to put my career ahead of my family or my family ahead of my career? And I think everybody runs into those decisions at one time or another, and you have to make your choices. As far as being a better scientist, again, the curiosity, the thrill of discovery, just the fun of it was actually, I would describe it as inspiring and enabling, certainly not a setback or a drawback. In terms of how I practice my career.
Christians are often labeled anti-science. How do you respond to that, Dr. Young?
Well, I'm always sad to see that kind of a label applied. Sometimes I'm irritated, but more often I'm sad. I think it's a superficial label, superficial in a couple of ways. One is, whenever somebody uses that kind of a label, I wonder, well, okay, how many Christians have you actually met? Do you actually know if you're going to apply that label? Where does that label come from? Is it based on somebody's remark? Well, do you really understand what their remark was or where it might have been coming from? And so it's a superficial kind of thing that I don't think is fair and I don't think it's accurate. Now, having said that, I think in some cases we as Christians maybe could be perceived that way if we don't take the time to understand, well, where is a scientist coming from whenever they're doing a certain kind of work? What's driving that work? What's the point of it? And we need to ask more questions. But the label itself, I don't think, is accurate. If you look through the history of science, certainly there are a number of scientists, some that I know, who are secular. Some are atheists. One friend of mine in particular, I recall him telling me, well, you realize there's no such thing as absolute truth. And I have to laugh because I'm thinking, okay, then why are you in science? Because isn't science about investigating truth? So it seemed like there was a little bit of disconnect there. The label itself, it seems like that's just a good way to, unfortunately, to keep from coming to grips with the real questions. What is our worldview? What is our understanding of truth? What motivates us? If we're curious, if we're motivated by curiosity, well, where's that curiosity coming from? The truth we're investigating as a scientist, well, where did that come from? Ultimately, it came from God, and I count it a privilege that we're able to investigate it and learn some things about his creation.
Finally, that Pfizer ad we discussed earlier strongly implies that given enough research, experts, and resources, science can solve any problem. Is that true?
Well, it's not true for two or three reasons. One is there's part of life that is not something that science can get its arms around, things that we can't measure. We can't even agree as a people what integrity is in our politicians. Science can't measure integrity. Science really can't measure love. Science really cannot measure beauty. There are entire areas of life that science really can't solve the problems. If I have a broken heart, science isn't going to help me. If I'm worried about tomorrow, science doesn't help me with that either. Faith in God is what helps me with that. There's another way to look at this, and that is, even if we just take the narrow point of view and look at the parts of life that science can address, there are still things that science can't do. And I will use the coronavirus as an example. And frankly, I would be happy to be proven wrong on this. But my understanding is we have yet to come up with a vaccine for any coronavirus. SARS, and don't ask me what that acronym, Severe Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome, I think. SARS was a coronavirus a few years ago. The scientists, there's a big crash effort to try to find a vaccine for that. The virus essentially dwindled away as far as its impact on society before science could find an answer. MERS, which was a Middle East respiratory syndrome, again, that was a coronavirus. Scientists worked long and hard to find a vaccine against that. As far as I know, there was never a vaccine found. The coronavirus that we're dealing with right now, you know, there's a lot of money, time, energy, manpower, a lot of expertise going into looking for vaccines, looking into treatments. We may find treatments. I have no idea if or when we will find a vaccine for this virus. Maybe it will happen, maybe it won't. But these are examples of problems that it's not true to say, given enough research experts and resources, we can solve anything. It's not assured. Science is not assured. New discoveries, Lord willing, new discoveries will come with a bit of serendipity at irregular intervals. But assured solutions, well, it's great that we can try, but they are not assured, and they really can't be promised.
Dr. Jesse Yao recently retired as department head from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, where he worked in applied science and led programs in energy and environment. He previously served on the Commission on Theology and Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's author of the book Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age. You can purchase this book by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy on the Talk On Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Yao, thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
On the other side, Pastor Brian Wolf-Miller will join us as we continue our series introducing the books of the Bible. Look at a short letter, a personal letter from St. Paul. I wonder why it's in the New Testament. We'll find out next.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our romp through Romans, exchanging the natural for the unnatural. Stop the judging already! Christ, the only judge, the conscience, and an honest appraisal. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute, verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
In sickness and in health, in these days of coronavirus panic, people are learning how difficult keeping this vow can be. The May issue of the Lutheran Witness looks at the wedding day. How does the couple plan their wedding with their pastor in a way that points to Christ, the only one by whom and through whom they can keep these impossible wedding vows? Read all about how Christ keeps his church in sickness and in health in the Lutheran Witness. Subscribe at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Our pastors especially have carried a large burden to maintain Christ's instruction to provide word and sacrament ministry to their flocks. Thank your pastor by sending him an Ad Crucem greeting card or gift suitable for any budget. We recommend embroidered face masks, stunning posters confessing the faith, a crucifix or a pectoral cross, Or how about a selection of Christ Mons? Recognize your faithful under shepherd for upholding the office of holy ministry during these adverse circumstances. Visit adcrucem.com.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor: Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois; Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan; Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas; Emmanuel Lutheran, Hamilton, Ohio; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri; Peace Lutheran, Filer, Idaho; Redford Lutheran, Redford, Michigan; St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois; St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan; and Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.